everyone. Welcome back to Rewatchable episode 136, our finale of the entire series of Legend of Korra and therefore the Avatar Nickelodeon universe. So we're going to be recapping today book 4, episodes 12, Day of the Colossus, and 13, The Last Stand, which is the very end of Legend of Korra. So that's almost the end of this run on Rewatchable. We'll probably have a roundup episode where everyone talks about, you know, their experiences with Legend of Korra in general. But after that, we're going to be moving on to a new show, which has been announced as Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So this is the last you'll get of this little gang. And yeah, I mean, maybe some of us are back for Buffy. I can't remember if Karen has told people about that yet.
Yet, but all four of us will be back, so that's good.
Yeah, and this will be my last episode, probably, as a host for a while, so if you're sick of hearing me dominate the conversation, good for you. If you are, you know, if you feel not good about this, you know, you can send your complaints to Karen, but that's fine. Mm. What? It's true.
That's mean.
You're in charge of the jobs. So, yeah, you can. But, yeah, that'll be happening. We're going to have two new hosts, a couple of new people on the show, and quite a few of our fun rewatchable team. I can promise that Ariana's docs will be making a return, and she'll be a newbie for Buffy. So that should be a wild ride for us all, I'm sure. Yeah, so we'll go into this finale now, so that's sort of exciting. If you want to talk to us about, you know, our entire Legend of Korra experience, there's no more spoilers to come, or if you want, you know, talk about things you've been bursting to talk about for ages, or if you want to say something about Buffy coming up, or whatever you want, you can email us on rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Twitter, re_watchable, this post on hyperball.com where our podcast lives, or you can join us on Tumblr, which is rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And so, yeah, just in this final episode, we've got Brittany, Mitch, Karen, and myself. And I actually just, we're going to do a little bit of a fun fact so that you recognize our voices one last time. But I also just want to get everyone right now, I mean, we're going to do many, you know, an intro for Buffy and stuff, but if everyone just wants to quickly say whether they're a newbie or a super fan for Buffy, given that Karen has said that we're all on, I'm Natalie, I'm your host this week, and I am also a Buffy super fan. I would say I'm more of a Buffy super fan than I am a Legend of Korra super fan. I have seen it many, many times, and it's been very influential for me, and I'm feel very interested in doing Buffy for a variety of reasons, including the fact that I used to think Joss Whedon was a genius and I now think he's a hack. So that's going to be interesting to go into. Karen, do you want to go next?
Sure. I'm Karen. I'm also a super fan. Not as much as Natalie, but I really love the series and I'm excited to see what the newbies think and if it can, like, hold up, given that it is a little bit of an older show. Sometimes the nostalgia is what makes it so great. So having people go in fresh this late afterwards is going to be interesting.
It was definitely great for its time, and there's going to be so much of this discussion later. Fantastic for its time, but very interesting because there's been so much, the bar's been raised so much since then about, you know, women on television and all sorts of things. So it's going to be interesting to see how it goes for newbies. And, yeah, those two over there are both going to be newbies for Buffy, I believe. Mitch, you're a newbie for Buffy, right?
Yeah, I mean, since I'm Mitch, I can't ever make things simple. A, I have the best fun facts that I still need to share because I was super prepared this week for this.
And okay, we can do a fun fact. It's fine. Do a fun
and
fact.
And you also said our fun fact that we're newbies.
That's kind of like, I thought that was the fun fact. Unless that's kind of lame. I watched the first season.
You can make your own fun fact. It's fine.
Okay. No, I watched the first season of Buffy, and it wasn't that I quit for any particular reason. We just had a fallout, I guess. But I already have a really intense Zutara ship in my own mind. No one else ships it already. It's Buffy Cordelia, and that's not even a thing, but it is for me.
No, it is. It's a thing. Like,
okay, good.
The show is like almost 20 years old. Every ship you can think of is a thing. And that's interesting to me because there's going to be some Cordelia-related arguments along the way, I'm 100% sure. Not that I don't like her. I think she's really brilliant. But, no, it's...
She's almost kind of... Okay, we can't talk about this now. We would totally get Buffy'd. I know what I'm...
We'll move
I know
on,
what I was about to say is going to be Teen Wolf related. That would have been really bad.
Let's move on.
We never would have ended. Okay, fun fact now or later?
Buffy episode now. I thought that was your fun fact.
No, oh no, I totally have the best fun fact ever.
Go, okay, fun fact.
Okay, so today I opened my mailbox and I found a weird letter from Georgia. I opened it up and it was a glitter bomb for my ex. What the living hell? You can send glitter bombs. Like you pay. I looked online. You pay $10.
Is that it?
But it says, and the website is glitterbombyourenemies.com.
That's really, like, adult and mature of him. Like, that's really weird.
Well, yeah. I found that absolutely astounding, and I didn't know that such a thing existed. You can actually send, like...
Oh, I knew it existed, but I thought it was, like, a joke. Like, I didn't think people, like, really
like,
did
legitimately.
Like, that's really... No. That's like, does he hate you that much?
I guess. I mean, I didn't think he did until I got this.
Or is it like a hilarious joke? Or like, I don't understand.
Oh, no, I'm laughing because I opened up in my car. So, and I have a cloth seats, so it's like embedded in there forever. So, haha, joke's on me.
That is mental. That is really not okay.
It's insane. But yeah, that's my fun fact for the week, that you can bomb someone if you really want. I mean, that's a thing. That's cool, I guess.
Who do you guys want to send a glitter bomb to? Karen?
Don't put me on the spot.
Who would you like to send a glitter bomb to?
I'm not going to say.
Oh.
I think
it could
Derek
be like a fictional character or like someone that you hate in like, you know, it could be Donald Trump. I don't know. Like.
Oh. No, do imagine Derek Hale receiving a glitter bomb. What would his reaction be? He'd probably wolf out and just start slashing at the wall.
This episode is already going way off track.
Okay, fine. We're gonna leave glitter bombs behind. Feel free to tweet us and tell us who you want a glitter bomb. Brittany.
I'm just going to read the synopsis so we get moving.
No,
so,
tell us
I'm
your
Brittany,
fun fact. Tell me your fun fact.
I've worked like 27 hours since Thanksgiving. So
I'm
super pumped to read this and do something okay. That is not folding clothes at Old Navy. So
let's go. Brittany's going to read the synopsis. She's pumped.
We have one giant synopsis this week brought to you by Mitch, and it is for Chapter 12, Day of the Colossus, and Chapter 13, The Last Stand. I have not read this yet, so it's going to be hilarious. All right. It's series finale time, so hold on to your ship tightly because you never know which way it'll turn in this epic final battle of bending and romance. The crew survived Kuvira's blast, and let's just all pretend that it makes sense that Batara Jr. was the only one that was hurt. Percy Weasley is allowed back into the family as he gives important shut-off information for Kuvira's robot. Lynn knows that it's going to take all of the mad geniuses available to take down Kuvira's platinum iron giant, so she employs Hiroshi Sato to build welding add-ons to Asami's hummingbird mechs. Milo is a dastardly little bastard, but goddammit, he's smart. Following the fartbender's lead, the crew attempts to take the Colossus out with paint balloons and a well-placed lava pit. Unfortunately, the airbending blasts aren't enough to knock this AT&T off its britches. After the Beifong sisters and Bolin crash a building on top of the metal-bending dictator, Korra freezes the platinum suit long enough to give Hiroshi and company an entrance to the robot's innards. Unfortunately, Asami isn't allowed nice things. Hiroshi is squashed like a bug as are our frail and fragile hearts. What a sentence! All the while, Pema, the queen of side plot, attempts to control the remaining refugees as they wait for escape out of the city. Prince Wu decides to be useful by using his horribly wonderful singing voice to convince some badger moles to dig an escape route. Seriously, you do not fuck with Wu or these badger moles. Piss them off and they'll demolish your vehicle while eating your innards as you helplessly witness your own demise at the hand of the musically challenged monarch's pets. Speaking of innards, Korra leads the assault on Kuvira, flanked by the Fire Ferret brothers and the Beifong sisters. When Lin and Su take out Kuvira's super weapon, they are flung to the side by an enraged Kuvira. Korra enters the control center to fight the dictator mano a mano just as the brothers hatch a plan to detonate the giant mech suit's spirit energy power source. In nearly sacrificing himself, Mako proves that he is indeed 100% fuckboy, but in fact 1000% bae. Boom, blam! Korra and Kuvira's epic battle bending battle is interrupted by the spirit energy's Korra explosion. Kuvira just doesn't know when to quit, so she latches on to the discarded super-powered mech arm that the Beifong sisters are still in and starts firing it everywhere. Kuvira isn't able to control the trajectory of the arm and is soon saved from the path of the super weapon by a spirit energy bending avatar. The new spirit portal is formed, and Korra pulls an Uncle Iroh by giving her enemy a lifelong lesson. The United Empire is called off by a changed Kuvira, and all is well. Epilogue. Bolin is officiating Julie and Varric's wedding. That's not how you spell Julie. And Lin has a boss new hairstyle. Prince Wu is stepping down in favor of a democratic election, and Mako, full well knowing where he stands with Korra, tells her that he'll always follow her into battle. Taking a break from the party, Korra is joined by at first Tenzin and then Asami. The two women make a plan to go on vacation in the spirit world together, and if you were a newbie asking yourself if this was the confirmation of hashtag the thing, you were right. Korra Asami is confirmed as the two walk off into the sunset, holding hands and staring lovingly into each other's eyes. Finn.
Beautiful. Well done, Mitch. That was great. I'm really glad I didn't have to say the word fartbender out loud, even though I've just said it now.
RRR. That was weird, too. I missed an A for the AT-AT, but it was a Star Wars reference, but I assume everyone got that.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I know what you mean now.
Not never AT-AT, mind. The cell phone company.
and Mitch has finally admitted that Mako is 0% fuckboy, 100,000% bae. So, you know, finally 100%. Mitch has gotten over his grudge. Okay, so, oh god, all right, first of all, in this situation, the attack on the, tower or wherever it is where they're all hiding out, where, you know, Kuvira's like, don't care about Batara anymore, gonna just, fire this thing at him. He's the only one hurt from that, apparently, maybe because he, like, wasn't emotionally prepared and everyone was like, yeah, Kuvira's probably going to kill us. And he was like, no. So he's like, body wasn't ready. So that happened at the start of this episode, and he's there kind of being, you know, he quickly changes sides. It's very Percy Weasley, I've got to admit. Realizes the error of his ways, realizes that his, you know, relationship with Kuvira was not super equal and that she was just like, meh, I'll sacrifice you. So he's like, back on team Beifong family and, like, tells them what to do to get out of it. So how did you feel about, like, Batar Jr. as a whole in this season? Like, because he's one of, like, not bad, like, oh, he's a badly done character. He's a very well done character, but God, I hate him.
Is
yeah, he's hard to like, in my
what
opinion.
Do you mean?
You said he's a well-done character. I just want to know why. I still don't feel like I know his motivations for ever starting with Kuvira in the first place.
Maybe, yeah. We could have got a little bit more of their backstory of how they got together. But I think he's a good example of that type of character of, you know, like, who's kind of being duped, I guess, by the leader, by the kind of the fascist or whatever. But I don't know, do you think that him and Kuvira had, like, a real thing and that she just believed so powerfully in her stuff that, you know, she was like, oh, I'll sacrifice you, like, no big deal? Like, was it hard for her, or do you think that she never really liked him, was just using him the whole time?
No, I think it was hard for her. We kind of talked about this, have we?
Last episode, we talked about it a little bit, that clearly her mission was more important to her than he was, but there was some emotion when she decided to fire on him.
Oh, well, she's very strange, Kuvira, so never mind her. So he's back on the side of the, you know, good guys, I guess, and, you know, manages to contribute something. And then Lin releases Hiroshi as well to help take the Iron Giant, so he's back, and him and Asami work together, which is nice, and then that sort of comes in later, I suppose. The airbenders, they have their little plan of attack for blocking everyone out with paint. And I'll say that, like, it's something that's interesting in these two finale episodes. Like, we've had a lot of, during this, you know, last few seasons, a lot of, you know, Jinora being very important. Not too much of Miki being very important, except for that one episode where she, you know, had focused around her. And in this, it was kind of like, you know, Milo was put to the forefront, and then we didn't – like, Nora's been, like, you know, a semi-main character for the whole series, and she had nothing in the two finale episodes. So mm-hmm. I still hate Milo, so I resent this. But yeah, well, that was –
Janora had, like, an emotional moment where she almost dies from the superpowered weapon, and then Tenzin saves her. So I figured that that was just, like – we can't use her, so here's the payoff of her character. You're going to feel emotions about her. Kind of like you don't see Lupin die in Harry Potter, but then you're upset that he's dead.
Oh, shut up, Mitch. anyway, how dare you? But, I don't know, so Milo has this, like, plan that all the airbenders do, and they cover the, you know, they block the visibility of the giant robot, which was a good plan, and it nearly works. I don't know, do you think Kavira should have had some sort of fix in place for this originally? Like, that she, you know, because she was only depending on, like, seeing out the main window, or, you know, how could have this woman, you know, improved her plan in order to not be foiled by a 9-year-old?
Well, she had those, like, water wiper things, so I feel like she was kind of prepared for it.
I don't know, like, should a good metal bender be able to do these things by feeling and, like, seeing through the ground? Like, you know, this wouldn't have been a problem for Toph. She would have just powered that thing without, you know, paint or no paint.
Yeah, but she still wouldn't have been able to see the airbenders flying around her.
Yeah, because they're not on the ground.
Yeah, I know.
Also,
but I mean,
like Karen said, that she did have something in place for that. Like, I would have never thought to put water there, because I was like, oh my god, like, something so stupid is going to stop Kuvira, and that's what made it such an awesome plan. But she was like, haha, nope.
Maybe she thought a lot of bugs were going to hit her windscreen or something.
Okay, no, this is legitimate. Why did they use paint? Why didn't they use glitter bombs? Put glue down, then put glitter.
That's a whole extra process. Step. Exactly. Like, no. You have to be more efficient in the middle of battle.
Glittered paint? I don't know. Like, that's still, like, more messy than just paint. Like, the paint should have been mixed with something, in my opinion, to make it stick better. But also, why didn't they freeze the water that she was, like, pouring out? Like, couldn't Korra reach up with her bending to that? Like, fly a little bit?
I was wondering about that, too. I thought...
Can airbenders freeze water? Can they change the temperature of air in order to cause hot or cold?
Yeah. They could probably make it blow up. Well, Aang has, I think, blown a large gust of air before to, like, you know, create ice. But I think he's also had waterbending at that point. It was very, like, you know, it was really unclear when he does it. So, ish.
I don't know. I'm too tired to make any sense of this. So, yeah. So basically this segment here just looks like Mitch has sort of unpacked some nitpicking about their battle plan, because his next point is the Bolin should have used lava bending on both of the mech's feet, which,
yeah,
I don't know. These
Do
battle
you know how much
things...
energy it takes to lava bend?
This is like the final thing. Like, go 100% Bolin.
He did. Bolin was struggling.
Well, I think maybe put it deeper so the thing sinks down, like, make the lava deeper. But he's only just starting. He's not got command of all lava all the time everywhere. Like, but
look at the, like, large lava pool he makes when he's fighting, when he's with Varric and they're with the rebels. They're, like, fighting, you know, Kavira's forces. He creates, like, a whole lava field. And to this comparison, I think that this foot still wouldn't have been, like, half of that field that he already created in that battle. And he had all this time, just like when the robot's just kind of chilling, to, I don't know, create a deeper pit or something, right, Brett?
I mean, they also could have not used, like, the stupidest, like, cartoon trope in the world of tying its feet together.
Trying to trip it over, I know.
Like, I feel like that's in every movie I've ever seen where a giant robot is coming to attack a city.
But I liked that it didn't work, because I feel like in most movies it does, but Kuvira, like, ended up defeating everything, the paint, the lava, the wires, and ended up staying upright.
So I definitely agree with that, but I couldn't believe it was happening anyway.
And thank God we have this whole, like, you can't bend platinum things. This is the only way for the series to ever work ever again. If there's some kind of metal, metal benders can't bend. So other than that, you can't make weapons of mass destruction that are not that are going to be effective against the enemy. Otherwise, they'd be able to bend them.
Yeah, metal benders
shut.
Can just undo any weapons, like, yeah. Basically. What about wood? Can anyone bend wood? It's like the Doctor, Sonic Screwdriver, doesn't do wood. Any wood benders?
I wish. Well, I mean, we have swamp benders, you know? So
you could probably
ish.
Set the wood on fire, but, you know, can you actually...
We're talking Trojan horse now. Is that what we want her to do? Kavira's Trojan horse?
I don't know. It's just... I'm just trying to think of, like, things that would stand up, like, as bending advances in what they kind of perfect with different elements, like, what could stand up to benders, basically.
Well, it was
what about
it was decent...
plastic?
Yes, that's another idea. Has plastic been invented, I'm assuming, in this universe?
I don't know.
If anything, who knows if it's mass-produced.
Okay, anyway. So Bolin and the Beifong sisters topple an entire building on top of the robot, which is fun. And then everyone ends up getting inside it in various parts, like Lin, Su, and Marco and Bolin. So a few, one of the most quote unquote effective things that happens is that Korra uses waterbending to freeze the mech in place, which, you know, might have been my first go-to, but never mind. The battle scenes in this were like too long for me. I needed them to be like 75% less. And I was just like, okay, to all of them, because like both episodes were really heavily battle episode. And I would have liked one like introspective episode and then one battle episode because it was too much for me. But I don't know if you guys feel the same or if you enjoy them.
I enjoy them. I like
I know
explosions.
You enjoy them. I
and
know
people
that.
Fighting. I really like them. I love bending so much. So
and Karen likes Mortal Kombat. So
let's not go there, Mitchell.
We can't let that go, Karen.
Well, you think Mortal Kombat is worse than you think liking Mortal Kombat is worse than liking Tremors?
Ooh, tough.
I watched 5 minutes of Tremors and I couldn't believe it was a real thing.
Oh my god. It's a real thing. And there's a TV show with Kevin Bacon coming out, and I'm so excited. So hit me
you
up.
Met Kevin Bacon, Brittany, didn't you?
Yeah. I've met him twice.
I told
that's
him
crazy.
Nice. Oh. What?
Yeah, he's very nice.
Okay, because I irrationally hate him, so I need like two people I irrational actors that I just hate their face and I want them to die is him and Greg Kinnear. Kevin Bacon and Greg Kinnear. Both of them, I don't know if it's just like the roles that they've played being such douchebags and things, but I have like vicious hate for both
well,
of them.
Well, you should so watch I'm, Kevin Bacon when he's on Will and Grace playing himself because he's hilarious.
Okay, well maybe that'll fix
have you
it
seen Footloose?
Yeah, it's not a good movie.
It's, like, one of the best movies ever made, first of all. But it's also a fantastic example of Kevin Bacon's acting ability. And The River Wild is terrifying, but it's also great.
Does this count as we're only, like, a certain degree away from Kevin Bacon? We're only, no matter what show we're talking about, we're only a certain degree away from talking about his horrible TV roles.
Okay, look, let's talk about Korra now.
Let's not talk about Kevin Bacon anymore. Okay. So Korra freezes the thing, Varric's hummingbird, Julie and Varric are doing one hummingbird and Asami and Hiroshi are doing the other one, and Julie and Varric's one is unsuccessful. This is after they got engaged, by the way. I can't believe that you like skipped over that because we need
honestly,
to break that.
A lot.
Honestly, that hashtag the thing was more exciting than the other hashtag the thing.
Yeah, I'm really? Sorry, but you didn't put any discussion about the engagement, and it was so much more interesting than this fucking battle.
It was
well,
so.
I was going to choose it as a favorite scene, regardless. So or
did
quote.
You see
or
the ring? Oh, the ring was like, oh my gosh, it's so pretty.
yeah. Oh, it was just so cute, and their whole, like, reunion and her telling him off, you know, originally, like, that she's, and, like, good for her, because she's clearly been in love with him for ages, but she's not willing to, like, roll over and, you know, take it, you know, like, she, as soon as she comes back and he's like, oh, Julie, she's like, no, we're not doing this anymore, even though I love you, we're not doing this anymore. And I'm like, good for you, Julie, good for you. And then he sort of gets his act together and proposes to her before they go out to battle, which is really nice. Yay.
Okay, so, if I wrote something, though, it would have probably been Ron and Hermione kissing in the Chamber of Secrets, so.
Oh, well, I suppose. Anyway, so they don't end up working out. Their hummingbird sort of gets knocked off course, but Hiroshi and Asami's gets in, and then Hiroshi ejects Asami from the hummingbird and, like, sends her out in the emergency eject seat, and he manages to still drill his hole in for them to get in, but gets killed, like, in the process. Like, he gets squashed in the process, basically. So, you know, that's sad, I guess.
I cried.
Really?
Yeah, I don't even know why, but I think it was just the fact that they reconnected, and that he wanted to prove himself, and he wanted to do the right thing, and he was willing to give his life for it. And just, like, the mental image of seeing him literally squash like a bug was kind of violent and, like, terrible. Mm. So, yeah, I kind of cried.
It almost beats out in my mind the violence of the murder-suicide of season one.
Oh, what, like, the, what's his face?
Noah Tak and,
Aman and
Tonrak.
Tonrak and whatever.
No, too many Qs.
All of these water tribe people have really crazy names. I know who you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, because that one was the most violent up until this point in my mind that they've shown.
This is the first real, good guy who's died, if you know what I mean, all of Avatar. Like, without, like, Jet, like, whatever. Like, Hiroshi was, like, more of a main character than Jet. And he was obviously bad for, you know, company and the supporting people, you know, the support doing weapons for the enemy and stuff. But ultimately, like, he's the father of one of the main characters. They have, like, an emotional arc where they, you know, have, you know, betrayal and then, you know, get back together and forgiveness. And then he dies. Like, we haven't actually had, like, a lead good guy character die at all in Avatar. So
I think this should have been. We had Aang die in season two, but he kind of comes back with, you know,
convenient spirit. That does not count at all.
No. it should. It should be new Avatar.
You're going to go into a third season of Atla with, like, Aang just being dead, like, properly. But, yeah, would have you guys liked more people to die or no people to die? How do you feel about deaths in this child's cartoon?
I think it was just enough.
I feel like Marco could have died. Not that I don't like him.
Okay, so I guess I should tell my funny story now. I thought he was going to die. I thought I read somewhere that he died. And I was waiting for him to die, and he never died. And I was, like, pleasantly surprised.
That's awesome, actually.
Like, I knew in my mind, I knew he was going to die. And I was like, oh, I can't say anything. And I got to make sure that I don't, like, hint at it. And it never happened.
How long ago was this? Have you been thinking Marco is going to die the whole series?
Yes.
Oh, wow. My God.
That's my favorite thing I've ever heard. That's so cool.
It was horrible.
No, that's so good. I think that that's great because it just shows, like, how hard we have to try to not be spoiled. And then you can still be surprised even though you think you're spoiled.
Yeah.
Except for the last shot of the whole show, you know, like we all knew from day one.
Yeah, that was always going to happen.
Yeah, there's no way to avoid that.
Yeah, it was quite a big deal.
Which it kind of sucks, though, because, well, the reason that sucks is because you know who lives and dies simply from who's involved in hashtag the thing. And there were a lot of high stakes for both of those characters. And
you knew Korra was going to make it till the end.
Did you?
Yeah, because if she died in the last episode. Yeah, if she could have died in the last episode, but you knew that she was going to be there for the whole series.
Like, I'm talking, like, you knew in this finale already going in she wasn't going to die. And I find that disappointing, because I thought she had a high chance of dying against Kavira from the fact of
her, a children's show. They're not going to kill the hero who the show's named after. Like, that was not ever going to happen. Ever. Where was I, though? Avatar Marco. I think him dying could have worked for the show if they'd wanted to do more deaths, if you know what I mean. Like, I'm glad that he didn't, but I think he's the one that would have made sense. Or maybe Lin, but Lin's already had a few close calls.
Oh, I was really worried about Lin, too, this whole series. Yeah? Yeah.
Well, she goes for it.
Did you have another spoiler that she died?
No, no. It's just I felt like she was such a big deal, and I instantly loved her back in season one, and I was like, yeah, she's going to die because they're just going to break my heart.
Mm.
Oh, well,
that would have been rough. That would have been really rough. That's why I thought when we get to it in a bit, you know, that there's like a fake out death scene for Lin and Sue. And every time I watch it, I'm so convinced that they're the ones that have actually died. And it's pretty crushing because like, what would that family do after that? Ugh.
I actually think it's more the one where Marco, like after he electrocutes the thing, like I actually thought that was more of a, like genuinely like, oh my God, he's died. Like if you're not.
Yeah. Cause in that one, it's not as like,
so did I.
That one, it's more of like, you know, they show more of his struggle as he's in his final battle. When it's Lin and Sue, they're kind of just tossed aside. And the only thing that kind of gives away that they're still alive is I think that they had a voice and a grunt. Because I bet you the Nickelodeon executives were like, guys, no, like they look like they're dead. We have to like make someone make a sound. But then again, no, but then again, Hua, she makes a grunt sound as after Mako electrocutes her. She falls on the ground and goes, ugh. So I'm like, where are we here? Does grunt mean alive? I don't know. I know they're alive, obviously. I'm not trying to make that argument, but just at first, it always seems to appear to me that that's, you know, their death scenes, the way they're thrown off, and it's so heroic.
Mm. Okay, can we talk about, like, the most legendary part? Like, everyone's got their own different bit that they contributed to the, you know, to the final battle. And Lin and Sue have one, and Marco and Bolin have one, which we'll go into in a moment. Let's talk about the most important one, Prince Wu and the Badger Moles saving all the civilians. Because, Jesus Christ. Hold the phone. It's the best thing in the show. I loved it. So basically that was, you know, him at the train station with all of the civilians trying to escape. Train lines have been cut, can't do anything. Pema is trying to keep everyone under control by singing them songs about the old airbender days, which is just like so lame, but, you know, whatever. I don't know if she's a good crowd leader or not. She seems to think that she is, but no one seems to be paying attention to her. But she does admit that, you know, raising Milo is worse than an enraged and terrified mob, which, same, probably, because he is horrible. But Wu, I'm so glad that he got this triumph moment of actually doing something useful and compassionate and logical and sensible. He kind of comes into himself as a leader, and then after that, you know, he at the end he decides to not keep doing that. Like, I hope that he gets elected as prime minister or something, but we'll get into that. So did you guys ever expect to see Wu have this kind of victory moment and actually come into his own as a intelligent and good leader?
I expected Wu to disappear about 5 minutes after he appeared on screen, so...
So you had no expectations at all?
So I had zero expectations for Wu. I was like, oh, this guy... Every episode, literally, I was like, oh, this guy's still here. Oh, this guy's still here.
Uh-huh. Oh, but were you happy? Did you enjoy this?
Yeah, I mean, might as well make him useful.
Yeah, I loved it. I was not prepared for it when I first saw it. I was really, really, really into it. And I have also decided on my rewatch of the finale this morning that I now ship Marco and Wu as a thing. It's my
hashtag. Oh, I was there so long ago, Natalie.
Really?
Jump on that train.
Why did you say
because I already have I can't betray Zutara. I have to like mainstream one ship to make sure it happens. My voice can only be heard in one.
This is so much more likely than Zutara because like come on, like Bolin and Opal end up together, like, you know, Jinora and Kai, Korra and Asami, and then like Wu and Marco are left over and they're sitting next to each other at the wedding, and like now Marco is like all impressed by Wu, and I feel like this could be the best ship ever. So I'm really into that. And, you know, he's concerned about Wu. He's like, you know, when and all of that. And I enjoy them. But
Natalie,
yeah,
he watches the man pee on a daily basis. Okay.
That's not what I'm into, Mitch. But okay.
I mean, just like that's it right there. Like, there's no need to understand any more than that's the ship.
Mitch, you're taking it to a place I didn't want it to go. anyway, he comes back with the Badger Moles. he has this plan to tunnel everyone out of the city, and even when the guards come are like, yeah, lol, your badger moles have left, he's like, ha ha, no they haven't, they're gonna kill you. And he just sets them on them and he's just like chill about it, and I'm like, you are now my favorite character in this entire series. It's so good. I don't know, maybe I'm the only person that this was amazing for, but it was like great.
It's crazy that he's just like, they don't note the fact that they just like murdered someone in front of this whole crowd. They're just like, yay, we saved the day, and he's saying a funny song, ha. And it's like, no, like people are being like eaten right over here. It's a lot.
Who would like to sing one of Wu's songs?
You, clearly.
Natalie, we're waiting for this.
Me? You're the one that put it in the doc, Mitch.
I wasn't planning on being on the episode, see?
Oh, okay. Well, I thought his songs were cute and adorable. I will sing one line of Wu's songs. I'll sing the first line. And he says, badger moles digging holes under a public city. And that's all you're getting. I also like his little tribute to Marco and Bolin's grandma. He sung her a little song. And yeah, he just killed it. I was just like so unbelievably impressed with him, and I love it. So I want a whole spin-off about Prince Wu now. So yeah.
I want to meet like a Wu cosplayer, kind of like the ones that we saw. Did I ever share, actually, there was a group that dressed up as the Love Cave people from Atla, and they went, like, went around Comic-Con and, like, sang
Secret songs. Tunnel. I hope
that there are a bunch of Wu class cosplayers at the upcoming Comic-Con just to, like, really, you know, rock it.
You'd have to be a very unique type of person to perfect the Wu mannerisms, probably.
But can you just imagine, like, gathering a crowd around you and, like, having, like, two badger mole cosplayers or something? Like, you're singing to them? Like, that's perfect.
I don't even want to think about him cosplay a badger mole. But anyway, let's move on to the other people who also did stuff. So Lin and Sue get inside the arm, and they disable the spirit vine laser because they're able to metal bend stuff inside because only the exterior is platinum. So they take down the weapon, and then Kavira just rips off the weapon with them inside it and throws it across the city, and then they, like, quote-unquote, die. They don't die. But, yeah, did you guys like seeing the sisters kind of battle together one last time, and, you know, now that they're so fully on the same side and all of that? And if you were Kavira, would have you made the whole thing out of platinum, or was it kind of a fatal flaw on her behalf, or was it, you know, what's the deal there with why they could bend inside?
I'm just wondering if they didn't have enough platinum, or if it was smarter to not have it made out of platinum in case they needed to bend it for some reason.
Yeah, I think that's probably it. She's inside it bending. Like, she makes it walk through bending. It's not actually a machine. It's her bending that makes it walk. So I suppose that it has to have that vulnerability. But, yeah, she's hoisted on her own petard.
So we're meant to understand that Kavira is really just moving each individual part, like arms and legs.
Yeah, it's like motion capture. It's like, well, you know,
it looked like
films.
She was bending the controls, like the levers.
Yeah.
Oh, some of the parts to me look like she was actually
I think it's too zoomed in. You're only seeing like her upper body.
Maybe. If you bend,
because it kind of reminds me of like. And like, this is kind of a weird reference, but the first thing that comes to mind is that Reptar suit in Rugrats in Paris, where they're just using controls to like move the whole thing around and whatnot, and it's just, it can like follow Chucky's body because he's wearing like that suit, you know?
Yeah, that's like motion capture, like kind of.
Yeah, like motion capture, exactly.
I don't know. If it is that she's just bending the mechanics, then that was her own fault because she should have just used the levers with her own hands. Not done this bending on it and then made the whole thing out of platinum, if you know what I mean, like made it unbendable and just done it physically. But if she was using the, if she was actually motion capture, making it walk and making it swing her arm by actually bending the arm itself, then that makes sense that the inners had to be stuff that she could bend. So I don't know.
Well, I think we're meant to understand that platinum is somewhat of a rare metal, and they used the Zaofu metal shell to create most of this.
Oh, I never thought of that.
So it's kind of like, totally, I mean, because I mean, yeah, I guess they couldn't have used platinum on those shells. I mean, they could have, but they don't, because I think we see the twins bend one out when they're doing that. Save Korra from the Red Lotus thing, so.
I don't know. The point is, if she's only bending the controls and not the mecha itself, then she's lazy for wanting to bend the controls instead of do them by hand.
Yes,
she's dug her own grave there, basically. So I have no sympathy for that. But anyway, so that happens. And then the other sibling winning team, Bolin and Marco, have this very emotional thing where they're going to shut down the spirit vine. And their first plan of, like, turning off the levers doesn't work. And then they fight some guards there together. And then Marco's like, you have to leave because I'm going to blow this up. And Bolin is very upset. So that was my most emotional moment of the finale. How about you guys? How did this make you feel?
Well, I was convinced Marco was going to die. And he didn't, so that was nice. But
yeah,
it was really nice seeing them work together. And it was really nice seeing Bolin working on equal footing. Not that he hasn't been an amazing bender this whole time, but I just like seeing him really serious and determined. And they were both on a mission and they were both in sync, and it was just really nice to see that.
Yeah, I really liked his little hot lava disc cutting whacking tool. And I think we've discussed before, maybe not in an episode that you were on, Karen, that we think, or at least some of us think, that Bolin is, if not always, but definitely now, Bolin is a better earthbender than Marco is a firebender. Like, he is a more powerful bender. And I really like kind of having that. But because another thing about Marco, like, the risk for Marco, like, doing the lightning, I don't know if we've ever seen him use lightning before. Mitch, do you know if we have?
Yeah, in the factory, he uses it. He uses it against Amon. In the finale, he shocks him and almost
bests
Amon with it. Yeah.
He uses it very rarely. And the way that he was kind of building it up, like in those same moves that, like, Iroh taught Zuko, it kind of looked like he was struggling with it. Like, it might be a thing that was actually, like, hard for him and, like, risky for him. Like, and I was like, oh no, don't shock your own heart or something. And
well, I mean,
so
he's, like, a pro at lightning bending. That was his job.
No, firebending, not
But
lightning.
When we first meet him, he's working in the factory and he's lightning bend, like, that's
oh
what he
God,
does.
Oh my God, that was like 12 years ago. I don't remember that. God.
me and Brittany had like this whole thing.
Now?
Yeah, you are. Oh.
The point is, the amount that he was doing, it looked, to me, regardless of how proficient he is, it looked like a struggle. Like, it looked like that he was.
Well, he's doing it like the most he's ever, like the hardest he's ever done it before.
And he's also channeling it through his body, it looks like. He, like, kind of opened up like a port in the side of the control room or whatever. And he's, like, absorbing that through his left hand, and then through his right hand he's shocking. So it's not even – he's not even creating it. He's really just letting
the
electric current run through his body.
Yeah, that's kind of what I mean. That it wasn't like, oh, zap with lightning. It was that he was doing that Iroh waterbending move, which is like, I wonder who he learned that from, by the way. Like, is that like now a thing that people do? And passing it through his heart, basically. That's what, or like through, not through his heart, through his stomach or whatever it is that Iroh said that he had to do.
Right.
And I was just worried for him. It looked like it was tough for him and I was worried, regardless of what.
I'm sure he'll have some digestive issues later on.
Yeah. So nice. So he explodes the power core and doesn't die, thankfully, but we do get a bit of a risk there. And it knocks Korra and Kavira apart because they've been fighting in the head part of the mecha, which is one of their many, many fights throughout this episode or double episode. And I don't know. I find them quite a weird match against each other, honestly. So yeah, how do you guys feel about sort of Kavira towards the end of this, now that this is the very end, and you know, she and they end up having that final showdown in the spirit world, which we'll get to in 1 second. You know, did you guys end up kind of liking Kavira or feeling much about her? Because she's sort of very blank to me throughout the whole thing. Like, she's very, I understand doing the whole, like, cold, emotionless thing, but with an animation, I don't know how well it comes across sometimes, because to me, I'm like, I really want to know more about why you are like this. So any unanswered questions you guys have about Kavira before we finish the show?
not unanswered questions, but with Kuvira, I kind of understand what you mean, because she has been very cold, and that it didn't really make her interesting, and even though we knew as a fact that she was doing this to save her people, it never really meant anything to me until this end where she and Korra talk, and I kind of got it at that point, and I think I have a lot more sympathy for her now than I did before. That's not to excuse anything she did, because she, like, basically destroyed Republic City, but I find her much more complex than I did when we first met her at the beginning of the season.
Yeah. So basically they go and, you know, they have their kind of fight up in the engine room, I guess, their first fight in, like, the real world. Well, not the first fight, but the first fight in the episode in the real world. And they sort of have their thing, and then the explosion knocks them all apart and knocks them out into basically the middle of the spirit wilds. And that is where Korra and Kuvira continue to fight. And, you know, Korra's kind of like, you know, it's over. You've got to just give this up now. You've got to give this up. And Kuvira says it's not, and ends up, like, kind of finding the spirit weapon gun thing and, like, manually trying to shoot Korra with it, and ends up blowing a hole in the space-time continuum and creating a new spirit portal. So they have this conversation in the spirit world about, not much, just, like, she has a big change of heart, which I kind of don't buy in a way. I'm like, how is this, like, actually done this for you? How has this, you know, kind of made you all redemptive? Like, because Korra basically has that conversation with her in the spirit world, and she kind of, Korra saves her. She's, you know, she energy bends the spirit energy weapon, and they have that conversation in spirit forms, and it's kind of just like Kuvira comes out of it, like, having seen the error of her ways, which I personally didn't find that realistic, but maybe someone has a different take on that conversation. So, yeah, I don't know. Brittany, did you have any particular thoughts about, you know, her big teaching moment?
No, I mean, I kind of knew it was coming, because with most of, like, the villains this season, it's been like, oh, it's okay, we'll just lock you up, or, oh, it's okay, like, I should have trusted my uncle one last time, or, oh, it's okay, we'll have a sit down and talk about this. But so I was kind of like, all right, well, we're not going to kill Kuvira at this point, so let's just get to the happy ending with her faster. Yeah, I was, you know, I knew it was going to happen. I wasn't surprised or disappointed by it. I was happier with Korra's overall ending than I was. I didn't really care about Kuvira by the end. I was like, okay, I know we're going to battle these last two episodes and we're going to come to an understanding. So let's just have some awesome bending while we do that.
Fair enough. Karen, you said that you kind of felt a bit more about her after this.
Yeah, definitely. The weird thing for me was, even though it was anticlimactic, I did still like it. I didn't really expect her to die, but I didn't expect her to understand how wrong she had been. And the fact that she had come to that conclusion was kind of satisfying, but at the same time, it felt a little bit like a letdown. So because she was so badass, and because, like, Korra had been having so much trouble going up against her time and time again. So I'm kind of on the fence. I don't really know how I feel about it, but overall probably more positive than negative.
I just found it a bit weird that it was like, oh, finally someone's given you, like, a therapy session, and now you've seen the errors of your way. Like, oh, you were an orphan. Oh, you just wanted to make a place where you and people like you felt safe. Like, it's like, yeah, okay. And, like, has no one ever said this to her before? Or has she just been that closed off from everyone that this is a conversation that, like, Sue could have had with her or something, you know? Like, I don't get why it now matters, and, you know, how it makes her now feel different, or if it's just that she knows she has no other option because she's defeated. I don't know. But her guards are still willing to go up for her when she sees Kavira come out. So people really believe in her. And then she tells them to stand down, basically, and then accepts all of her punishment. So that's good, I guess. That's a way that, you know, I think that what Brittany said is right. This show always kind of just has their villains, like, take their punishment, if you know what I mean, take their medicine. Like, we haven't really had anyone who's, like, in Atla, the Fire Lord and Azula were both a bit like Ozai and Azula were both like sort of taken against their will. But in this show, everyone's kind of just like peacefully in prison, except for if their other option is to blow themselves up. So it's interesting. I don't know if this is like meant to be like a teaching lesson for the children or something about like learning, like when you make a mistake, this is what you should do. But I don't know. More interesting than all of that is like the epilogue where basically there's, you know, the wedding of Varric and Julie, and we have all of the little bits wrapped up with Prince Wu and with Varric and Julie. We see little cameos from a lot of different characters. Some other ones are significantly missing. Korra and Tenzin have a talk that's very important, and then hashtag the thing. So we can go through all of those points basically and talk about our favorite delightful moments. Oh my god. Brittany. I know, Brittany, I know.
It's been so annoying, Mitch.
I'm sorry.
I wanted to Google it and I forgot and just went with it. I was like, it looks right. Yeah.
So first of all, like, are you guys ultimately like happy that Julie and Varric ended up together romantically? Like, is that what you saw happening like from the start with them, like with their weird relationship? Or I know that, like, you know, Karen, you know, we've discussed like the, you know, the Pepper Potts element of her, and that's certainly a romantic relationship. So how do you feel about Julie and Varric? Like, do you think there's like it's weird and unequal, or do you think they've managed to, like, you know, is Varric's kind of oblivious, is that caused by like obliviousness, or like, you know, what do you think, it's an actual good relationship now?
I definitely think it's a good relationship now that she's put her foot down and is like, look, you can't treat me this way or I'm going to walk. I mean, she loves him, but it's not, you know, she's not going to stick around and be abused because of that. So I like that she did that, but I also like that he's so willing to like let her kind of dominate their relationship, because when they kiss at the end, like she puts him down and kisses him, and it's just like a lot of the roles are reversed sometimes. So I really enjoyed that aspect too.
Yeah, I do think that his kind of like demanding qualities, they're not like genuine dominance. They're not like genuine, like, you're my servant, do what I want. It's kind of just that he's like, you know, high strung and oblivious. And she's like, hey, I know that you're actually good, but could you not do this because it's like comes across really badly? And he's like, oh my God, okay, cool. I won't do that because I actually love you and I haven't expressed it in the right way. Again, very Tony Stark, as that thing I sent to you the other day is exemplary of. And I don't know, like, Brittany, without the Tony Stark element, how did you feel about Julie and Varric getting together?
I've seen Iron Man, the first one, so, you know, I can hold my own here.
I'm equipped to answer this question.
I wouldn't call myself an expert, but
I mean, you did color a picture of Iron Man for me, which I have yet to get in the mail.
That's because it's coming when I send it.
Wow.
Actually, the other day I went to go mail it and I'm like, you know what? I need to buy a folder to put it in because I don't want to bend it. So I need large envelopes and a folder.
There's
a lot of moving parts.
Where's the who's colored a picture for me? No one's colored a picture for me.
I'll color you a picture. Okay. So this
I have a picture from you too. Wow, this is great.
You
I love
do.
This.
Oh my God.
I drew Mitch on Appa for Secret Santa present last year, and it comes.
Oh, that was really good. I remember that.
Wi-Fi, yeah.
It's still hanging up in my kitchen, by the way. Like, I look at it every day.
Oh, I feel so honored
because I got it framed and everything.
Anywho, Varric, I thought this was the most rewarding payoff of the entire series. So
wow.
I'm just going to drop that bomb right now. yeah, it, like everything Karen was saying, it's, she, like, Varric is deep down a good guy. I've been saying it since episode one. He just needs, like, he's too high strung and he just needs to be brought down to earth every now and then. And Julie can do that. And he respects her. And it was so exciting. I was so happy. This is the bigger the thing than the actual thing.
I wonder, did you like their little water tribe wedding that was even in the, like, because he's from the water tribe. So they had this, you know, pretty water tribe wedding with snow and stuff, like, but in the middle of Republic City. Like, so someone had to, like, provide those decorations, like, bending and stuff. And I thought it was really, really nice.
No, it's really good. And I loved, like, you know, that Bolin was the master of ceremonies and, like, Master Pabu jumped up with the vows. Like, I just loved all of that, especially because I was so disappointed by so many other things. Especially, I don't know what book four, man. Oof.
Is better than four, I know, but...
Three is better than four, which is better than two, but one is still, I think, pretty good. Mm. Except for the whole Unalaq thing, but whatever.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, I thought that the wedding was a good ending for the whole series. Like, I didn't want it to just end being, like, them all, like, you know, panting and the destruction of
holding hands around the spirit, like, vine. Okay. Yeah.
Good job.
So who would have you liked to see at the wedding that maybe wasn't there? Like, or, like, see one last time in the entire... you know, Avatar universe, because
because Bumi fell off the face of the earth in book four, and I am not happy about it.
I'm sure there was a shot of him in the final.
There was a shot of him, but you asked who you want to see more of. I want, to know what happened after his airbending training. We barely saw him airbend. Like, you saw him, like, greet everyone once, and then he was airbending as, like, part of the big team in the finale, but, like, what happened? He was, like,
I love how loyal you are to him just because he's also Bumi. And I still have no idea why you love the original Bumi so much.
Listen, the original Bumi is the best character in the entire Avatar universe. But this Bumi, I was just so invested from the start because it was like a Bumi 2.0 and I was waiting and waiting and waiting to see who he was. You know, I would have liked more of him. I would have liked more General Iroh to, you know, pop up and be like, hey, guys, good job.
Oh, he's so hot. Anyway. Pardon?
I said, I know, he's so hot. Like, I just wanted him to come back.
And he had so much better chemistry with Korra than, like, any other character on this show. But in this final scene, like, no Kaya, no Katara, you know, no
Azuka.
I mean, I don't know how much these people care about, like, you know, it's not Korra's wedding, it's, you know, Varric's wedding, but, like, all of the people that, you know, they could have done, like, a pan over, like, one last time of all of these characters that we, you know, are never going to see again, probably, but there were some ones there, like Tano, the emo pro-bender that I love, he was the trombone player at the wedding. And I don't know why, but he was.
Like, oh, yeah. We have that callback, but, like...
that very important
callback. Glad that paid off. I've been waiting all season to pay off.
Well, Randall, do you remember how Tano was, like, so much of a thing to the fandom for some reason?
Yeah, because he's gorgeous and ridiculous. He is both aesthetically pleasing and also, like, a hilarious parody. So, yes, I totally get why Tano is a thing.
And see, wouldn't Tumblr explode if, like, Tom Hiddleston was to play him in a live-action Korra movie?
Tom Hiddleston is, like, 20 years too old to play him. Thank you very
That didn't
much.
Stop you them want, in the first you want, Avatar you Left Airbender
like,
movie.
You want, like, Ezra Miller or something. Like, that's who you want. But anyway, Karen, is there anyone you would have liked to see in the epilogue that we didn't see?
I mean, other than the people you guys mentioned, not really. I was pretty happy with how it played out, actually.
I enjoyed Milo making the emo son of Sue dance. Not Milo, Iki making the emo son of Sue dance with him. Why do I keep saying him? Milo's not a part of this. Iki, who is a girl, making the emo sculptor son of Sue dance against his will. I enjoyed that a lot.
Is that
but
more... then for them? Is that meant to be like...
No! Maybe in 10 years, but no. Like, they have less of an age gap than Tenzin and Pema, but not right now.
I mean, we had Aang and Katara. That was like, what? That's probably the same group.
It's been like 2 years. Don't... We're not going to compare that. More important, so, I mean, yeah, Brittany's mentioned the muted down role of Bumi this season because... Yeah, he was kind of just been, again, same as Jinora. I mean, Jinora had stuff earlier this season. But, yeah, like, some of these characters really didn't get much of an ending, basically, and that's a bit of a shame, but never mind. Maybe there'll be a whole comic spin-off series about Bumi.
I can only hope. I'm just going to, like, write it and just send it to them, and then they can do what they want with it.
Good.
You did write your very own hashtag The Beach, and it was fabulous.
I did. Hashtag Vacation Tenzin.
Yeah.
Oh, I love Vacation Tenzin. So a couple of big things happened. One of them, which was that Prince Wu, you know, he'd get all of them like, hey, you did really good, Prince Wu. And, you know, I forgot. If you don't respect the brooch, you don't respect me. Sorry, that was actually my favorite of Wu's songs. That's good. But yeah, because Korra asks, you know, is he King Wu now? And he's like, actually, thinking about stopping that and doing democratic states. Like, so basically, he's actually, because of what Kuvira did in kind of taking all of the states under individual power, you know, the Earth Kingdom originally had, like, a monarch. But because of how bad kind of the dictatorship of Kuvira was, he thinks the next step is to actually dissolve the monarchy and make all those states, you know, individual, like with individual leadership without having a central monarchy. And I don't know, you know, how that's going to work, if that's something that they'd want, but it shows a really, you know, good intention from him. And you know, Korra says she's going to help him. And I don't know if Marco is going to go off with him and help him do that and continue to be his bodyguard or his advisor or whatever. But, you know, they're probably going to fall in love and get married. So that'll be good. And I really like that ending for him. I really think it's a really cute ending, despite, you know, I do respect the brooch. So, you know, he can still be the king if he wants to. He could be like a constitutional monarchy where it's just like a figurehead and he, like, does party planning or something.
England, yeah.
Yeah. Though that's a whole – I love the British monarchy, but there are, like, issues with, like, the wealth and stuff, though they do make a lot of money in tourism. Long story, that's not for this conversation. Marco has his big moment with Korra of saying, just so you know, I've got your back forever and ever. I'll go into battle with you anytime. I am now your number one ally in fighting. And yeah, did you guys, I mean, if you guys didn't know about hashtag the thing, would you think that this was a romantic moment?
Oh, hell yes.
Nah,
really?
I think she's kind of over him at this point.
Look at those googly eyes she gives him, though. She's like, thank you, Mako. Please follow me into battle. And
but
it's like,
I also don't think this was, like, a huge, like, shocker. I'm like, wouldn't you have done that anyway? Like,
I don't know.
This battle?
Maybe he just needed to clarify that, like, you know.
Like, he needed to clarify actually... that they were broken up.
He needed to clarify that who's with Prince Wu now. He can't be chasing after
Korra. That they're actually BFFs forever, like, or whatever. So, I don't know.
Even if you don't write me letters, I'll still follow you to the ends of the earth, whether you want me there or not.
Yeah, that's kind of intense, Marco. But, yeah. I really like the moment. And I don't know, do you think that they're going to, like, work together forever, or do you think that he's going to go off with Prince Wu or what? Like, is she going to be, like, his number one, you know, priority? Like, you know, I hang out with Korra and I fight with her or help her or whatever, or is he going to, like, help her from afar?
Wouldn't he, like, be the third wheel now? I don't think he'd like that for long.
Yeah.
I don't think he'd hang out with her all the time. You'd have to figure out, like, something else to do in the downtime. Yeah.
I just think of him more like Korra's beta at this point, quite frankly. That's all I can really compare it to. It's kind of just like, yes, Korra's, like, main bay, and everyone else is just side bay. And I'm cool with that. I'm cool with this being like a total wolf pack thing. It's not even to say like Team Wolfish stuff, just because I'm talking to you two, but it really just feels like she has her pack now.
That's actually a thing.
Yeah.
Like human beings do this too, like not just wolves.
No, I don't know what you're talking about. So she has like, what?
Okay, very 30-second summary. In wolf packs, in real nature, there is an alpha in a pack.
Oh, yeah, I know how wolf packs work. But
see, that's what he's talking about.
Okay, so, all right. Well, then no. I think that's stupid. I think
Korra's the alpha, and that Marco is her second in command now of
Team Alpha. No, that's not going to happen. I think that Mako's going to do his own thing because he's going to be bored. Or think that it's really awkward for him to be around that much.
Imagine him seeing his ex-girlfriend's canoodle.
And just
how much he would be like not wanting to be in that room. Because remember how like when they were just friends and that was already making him awkward, he was like, I don't know what to say here. Like, you're picking on me, leave me alone. I can only imagine how much they pick on him nowadays.
I know they're doing comics that are gonna go into like the Kurosami relationship that's going to be like them after they're together, you know, moving on from now. And I really hope there's some of Marco reacting because
Actually what would be like hilarious is if like instead of them being together, like, you know, when they were together the first time, like you were saying, Mitch, it made him all awkward. It's because he's like, well, which one is going to choose me? Which one is going to choose me? And now it's sort of like, oh, well, neither of them are going to choose me. So what am I doing here? Like, I need to go and hang out with Prince Wu and start Mitch's ship because that's all that's left in my life. Or whose ship was that?
Me! Apparently also Mitch. But I've got my 0/50 on this today. So I think that him and Prince Wu could make a beautiful ending together. Korra has that nice conversation with Tenzin where he's kind of like, you've done so much, like, in a few years, you know, compared to so many avatars, like, you know, and that's talking about all the stuff, you know, she started the airbender thing again and the spirit world, and I don't know, like, yes, yeah, it's true, she has done a lot, like, whether it's good or not, I don't know, but, you know, I suppose bringing back the airbenders is probably good, but do you think that Korra's going to have, like, she's like, but I've only just started, I've got the rest of my life, like, do you think she's going to now be, like, super chill for the rest of her avatar-ness, or do you think she's going to keep having this drama that seems to surround her for the rest of her life?
It seems like it hit her at a pretty fast rate. I wouldn't be surprised if she had to wait to be like Grandma Katara age to finally be like, I'm backing out of the fight. I'd love to see an old Korra. I'd really love to see how I wonder if she would be like Katara too, because Katara just completely transformed into like just a grand who just sits there and is like, yes, of course, as opposed to, no, I'm going to bite your head off. And now I wonder if Korra would turn into like the same kind of, you know, wizened old grand in the North Pole.
I don't know. It could be interesting because, you know, for example, like Harry Potter, like he probably had, you know, some ups and downs after the final, you know, Voldemort thing. But he kind of just had, I don't suppose the cursed child play is going to deal with this, but, you know, we don't, as far as we know, he didn't really have any other big enemies. He kind of just had to, like, make a life for himself after that, kind of picking up the pieces for the rest of his life. And I wonder if Korra will just be picking up the pieces for the rest of her life, or if there's going to be any enemies and conflicts as big as these ones that she's had in this course of 3 years or whatever again.
Well, I don't really think that was necessarily like her fault. Like, she was just reacting to all of this stuff that happened. So I feel like it's not really up to her or her personality, like whether she's going to keep fighting or not. It's just, you know, if things keep happening, she's going to keep being the avatar.
Yeah, that's what I mean, but it's like, has the universe dealt her lot in life already? If you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what would be really fun comic fodder if they were to do essentially what they did in Atla Comics? I won't spoil that, but I'll just say if they were to release Zaheer and like use him for something and then he escapes to do his own thing, because he's still around for a purpose.
No, he's around to be Korra's spiritual advisor and best friend for the rest of her life. Thank you very much.
Or Kuvira, if she can come out of jail to do something else, like, to be good.
I think Zaheer has more of a chance than that than Kuvira.
Yeah.
I think Zaheer is 100% someone who should be Korra's ally for the rest of her life. And I believe in it unbelievably strongly, so don't argue with me.
okay. What are we talking about? We can still just get like a Zutara comic and call it a day. I don't really need anything else, Korra. I'm satisfied. I'm still waiting for my ship after all these years.
Yeah. No, okay. Let's finish up. So basically the last thing is like hashtag the thing. Like she has a conversation with Asami about, you know, like, oh, not ready to go back to the party. We're just going to like sit here and hug. And then, you know, Asami's like, I need a break. I want to go on vacation. And, you know, Korra says she'll take her to the spirit world. And then it cuts to, I don't know, however long, like a day later or later that night, where they've gone off and got some supplies and they walk into the spirit world together, holding hands. And then they turn and they do the two hand holding thing, which is specifically meant to mimic the wedding hand-holding that we just saw with Julie and Varric. And, yeah, so hashtag the thing, they ended up kind of at the start of a romantic or intimate, you know, I've chosen you over all other people relationship. And when this happened, it was, like, somewhat unclear, like, to some people whether that's what it was definitely meaning or not, like, whether, you know, whether there was hardcore speculation of, like, is that hashtag thing, or like is that just a nice moment or whatever? And both of the creators, Michael Dante Martino and Brian Conicico, which I can never pronounce properly, both immediately wrote like long Tumblr essays about like, yes, this is the thing. We had decided this is the ending, this is a romantic ending. That what you saw is the furthest Nickelodeon would let us put on the television, but that is 100% what happened there. So just so that no one's arguing about it or is trying to, like, you know, no homo this, that did happen. So
I'd be surprised about the people that still argue that this isn't a thing. Like,
it's a thing.
I know.
Guys, like, you need to let it. It could have been more of a thing, but it wasn't, you know, this is as much of a thing as it was allowed to be within their control. And they went on record to specify that very, you know, very
did clearly. I have a quick question about this.
Yeah,
because clearly, like, I mean, I've seen pictures of when this first came out, I think it was Mikal wrote an article about it and mm-hmm. kind of talking about how Korra like blushes when Asami says something to her and how, like, you know, they were kind of laying the bricks for this. So clearly, yeah. I think they had it in mind for a little while. Is this part of the reason why book 4 ended up going online?
That's a very good question. I don't know, honestly. It could be. You'd hope not, wouldn't you? You'd hope that it would just be like, you'd hope, you'd be like, if you're going to make it gay, you have to not put it on the television where kids can see it. It's like, really? But
well, I wouldn't think so from the fact that these two episodes, aired on TV the same day that they released online. I remember it was like midnight release for the episodes and see them tonight at 7:00.
Oh, that's nice. Maybe not. I don't know. I think that was more of like a budgeting, like, and equally not great situation, but
it seemed to be budgeting for the fact that the ratings were going down a lot. I remember, incredibly so. For I think like the fourth episode is when they started airing online. It was weird.
Yeah, I don't think that, you know, it was specifically because of this. I'd really, really hope
the third season, I should say.
So yeah, I mean, what did you guys feel about hashtag the thing? Like, you know, we've talked about it a couple of times about, you know, whether it was, you know, really built up enough or obvious enough or whatever, or why they like each other in that way. But yeah, how did you feel about the ending, Karen? Like, how did you end up feeling about it once you saw it?
I really liked it, and I wish we could have seen more. I wish there could have been more stuff going on between them that really showed us why they had feelings for each other. I mean, I can speculate, and I think everything that they've been through, it really makes sense, but it would have been nice to see it anyway.
Well, also, you have to think of the season 3 finale where, you know, Asami's, I'm here for you for anything for that matter, wink, and then she only writes letters to Asami. So you kind of get an inclination if you want to read into it that way. And then there's the blushing. The blushing is a pretty big moment that people like to harp back
on.
That's what I mean.
When she says that she's the hair and stuff.
That's what I mean. Like, it makes sense and you can see it there, but it would have been nice to have more anyway, because like there was a lot that had gone on between Korra and Mako, and even Mako and Asami, and I just wish that Korra and Asami could have gotten the same exact treatment.
Yeah. I am.
What a love triangle, you know, though. I mean, how often can we say that the love triangle nearly completes itself all the way? Actually, this one did. That's really weird. Oh, that's like, God. Oof. Damn. It sounds like a soap opera, honestly. It doesn't seem real. It seems like one of those, like, steamy romance novels with the shirtless man holding his babe on the, you know, windy shore or whatever. But it's really just legitimate romance that I appreciate. It doesn't feel that cheesy because it feels like, to me, they developed each one of these relationships very well. And they developed these characters outside of those. Like, Mako's no longer a fuckboy. And Asami's always been such a badass bae over there. So it just really makes me happy to, I don't know, I guess really complete this triangle in a way that I saw it going, personally.
I mean, do you think that it makes sense, like, and that it, or did it, there are those moments that they chose to start playing in, but kind of, it's similar to Hannibal in that, both of those situations,
until the finale.
Well, you know, they were facing each
that
other
was kind
over,
of in your face, the finale.
Pardon?
I said the finale what? Was a little like, here it is, here's what we're trying to say.
In Hannibal. Yeah, but let me tell you about why it's similar. It's similar because both of the ships were not planned from day one in that way, but became planned when the creators saw that the story that they were trying to tell, like, could be more than that, if you know what I mean. When they, it's not exactly like reacting to fan response, but it's like, oh, that does work like that. You know, that's how people are interpreting that. Actually, you know, maybe we could do that, and then doing it, basically. And that's what happened with Hannibal, and that's what happened with Cora and Asami as well. And I really appreciate that. But as someone who does kind of, like, look for queer subtext in things, I wouldn't have necessarily picked these two because, like I wouldn't have necessarily seen this because I don't think, and I don't think it's the creator's fault. I think it's probably Nickelodeon's fault, but I don't think that there was quite enough to imply what they were necessarily implying, maybe in the final episode, but not leading up to it. And there was a lot of debate about it until the guys confirmed it, and both of their essays on Tumblr about it are really beautiful pieces of writing. And really appreciate that they wrote them. And I was never like, no, it's not that, if you know what I mean. I was like, if you say it's that, okay, like, cool, that's definitely just happened. But I would have probably liked more that really showed it, if you know what I mean, or implied it. There wasn't a lot of time for conversation in the, you know, in season four, just people having conversations. Especially towards the end of it, so there wasn't that much of a chance for anyone to develop these things, but I would have wanted a bit more, I think. Okay, so anything else with this before we finish up the whole series, basically? You know, anything that we wanted to see in the finale that we didn't, like, not just at the wedding, like, but something that we wanted to happen in the finale that didn't happen, or something like that, or think something that really satisfied you that did happen?
The wedding between Julie and Varric was definitely satisfying. I was actually really impressed with the finale that it wasn't more tragic. Like, I thought the
Mako was gonna die.
That was a huge surprise. The previous episode, the one before the final episode, made me really emotional, and I was kind of all, like, already on edge with the finale, and then the finale turned out to be really beautiful, and I was like, oh, well, this is actually kind of a good change of pace, and I kind of like it.
Yeah, I agree. I liked that there was the whole, like, it wasn't just a battle up until the end. Like, there was time to come down from it, sort of like we had in Atla, like, where, like, you know, we had those little moments, like, right before Aang, like, went before all the people, like, you know, like, you had, like, the just a bunch of time to, like, catch your breath before it ended, mm-hmm. And I was happy that the battle ended so, like, with time to spare in in the second episode.
Anything that you would have liked to see?
I think I kind of touched on everything that I wanted to see, mainly just some more Boomy, see what he's up to, see what he's going to do, some more Iroh. Still would have loved a trip to the Fire Nation.
I know.
Haven't gotten that, but But I wanted to see, like, you know, what Zuko did with the place after taking down his sister and his dad. Like, you know, maybe he hung some new curtains. I don't know. We didn't get to see it. So, yeah.
I want to see the Fire Nation simply to see Zuko's curtains, please.
Yeah. Like, how did he redecorate? You know?
Are those swords still up on the wall?
Yeah.
Does he still have that throne with the, like, row of fire in front of it so no one can get close to him? Like, you know, like, okay.
Does he have the blue spirit mask? That'd be a cool throwback if we saw it again in Korra.
He threw it in the water. I wish he could have it, because it's the first sign of his goodness, but, you know.
Yeah.
But he doesn't need the mask to be good anymore, Mitch. He can just be good for his own self. Okay, so a couple of things. First of all, we've got, like, you know, the entire, you know, example of this, you know, this children's show, very, you know, long-awaited children's show ending in this lesbian relationship. So, I mean, I don't even feel like this is something we need to say, but I also feel like we need to say it just in case people think that we need to say it, that it's, like, you know, awesome to see that in something directed at, you know, at kids and, the, you know, and normalizing it and stuff like that. I feel like it's not something we need to say because we're all just going to be like, yes, duh, we agree with that. But just in case anyone feels like that's a thing that we need to say, having that kind of representation or just the normalizing of such things, because kids don't necessarily have, like, you know, preconceived ideas, and it's only once they sort of start to learn something is not considered normal or never seeing something that they thought would have made sense, that they get the, you know, the ideas of heteronormativity. So I don't know, does anyone have anything particularly deep to say about, you know, seeing a show like this end in a queer relationship compared to something like a post-Watershed Hannibal type show end in a queer relationship?
No.
I think it's fun because it's almost kind of like, and I don't mean to say this in, like, Bryke had a negative relationship with Nickelodeon, because they consistently deny that they do, so I'll believe them that they don't. But it's almost kind of like one final punch to say, like, you know, maybe we didn't get our way a couple times, but we got this one final
we're
thing
having
that we really
this.
Wanted.
Like, we're having,
like,
this.
Like, this is done. There's nothing to change here. Done. And I here I go again with McCall called me out for this last week. I have mysterious interviews that I can't seem to find. They're probably headcanon, but I'd imagine at least that Bragg probably wanted them to at least kiss and make it more official on screen.
They,
but
no. They definitely said in their essays that they asked Nickelodeon what was the most they could show and what's on the screen is the most they could show. So they clearly wanted to go further, but this was what they were told they could do.
It is what it is. Like, the canon is the canon, so why can't they have the kiss? That doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand the logic of
that. That's very backwards. So I agree with that. I don't know. Karen, Brittany, anything to say?
Not really. I think it just sucks that Nickelodeon has to kind of perpetuate this idea of having to hide relationships like this, or that they can't show the same amount that they could with heterosexual. And I just, you know, it's really dumb. And I think kids need to see this, because this is what's happening in the world right now. And, you know, they're going to learn it sooner or later. They might as well learn it at a young age and realize that it's a good thing. And that somebody like Korra and Asami, who are completely awesome on their own and just, like, they have their own personalities. They weren't built to be in a relationship together. Yeah, they have their own stories. And they're just so kick-ass, and they can be together, because that's just how it is. And so, yeah, it makes me kind of angry. And Nickelodeon, but whatever, it's over. It's real.
Well,
so.
Because I have to start making everything about the Captain America Civil War trailer, I've definitely seen a few posts on Tumblr, and it might be people. I always wonder with fandom, like, if they kind of make up, like, posts that they know are going to be popular for attention and stuff. I don't know. But I've definitely seen a couple of posts with, like, talking about, like, heteronormativity and children, and, like, someone's, like, 7-year-old, you know, seeing that trailer and being like, being like, is he going to kiss Bucky at the end? Because of the, you know, the idea that, like, if that was a female role, like, the actions taken in the name of that character equals kiss at the end, if you know what I mean. But with a male, yeah, it doesn't necessarily. And so I think that's the same kind of thing that, like, it's just an idea of kids before they get taught that, like, oh, well, if it's a boy and a girl, that's what that's going to mean. And if it's not, then that's not what it's going to mean. Is if they can get in younger than that, then, you know, if they can learn younger than that, that, you know, it can go all over the place before they get the preconceptions, then that's better. So it's not great that this, it wasn't, you know, Kurosami ending wasn't necessarily ambiguous to us, but it was ambiguous maybe to younger kids, which is a bit disappointing. And it was ambiguous to people who just wanted Makora to happen or just were fighting against it for some reason. Anyway, let's move on to our favorite scenes and lines quickly and then finish up because we've been going for a little while now. I don't know if there was anything, Mitch, you wanted to particularly say about the parallels between the end of the Outla finale and this finale. I don't really think about things in that context, so I didn't have much thoughts on that.
I can just state that I know that Bragg wanted to recreate the final Katara Aang kiss scene with the staging of Katara and Asami and I suppose kind of like the lighting and the pose that they were in, you know, save for the kiss. Because apparently it's okay for Katara to kiss a bald baby.
12-year-old. Like,
yeah, that's yes. Okay. That's cool. We just can't have women kissing on TV. Whatever.
Yeah.
But I also thought of another parallel off the top of my head that energy bending seemed to be a big thing and that Aang energy bends or spirit bends. I'm not really sure what the difference is there. Ozai. And that's like, you know, a big revolutionary thing. And then Korra here straight up, you know, bends just pure energy coming out of the spirit cannon, which I'm sure has to have been a special avatar thing, not just something that even like, you know, Unalaq could have done with his spiritual connections or whatever. So, yeah, I didn't know if any other ones screamed out to anyone else, but I guess giant mechanical things that we're trying to take down, that's kind of a thing.
True. Well, if anyone else thinks of any, feel free to come and let us know about that if you'd like. But, yeah, favorite scenes and lines from the episode 12 and episode 13, very quickly. My favorite scenes in 12 were literally every second of Prince Wu and his rescue with the badger moles. So that was my favorite. Karen, what was your favorite moment in that episode?
Milo being a boss and coming up with great ideas and taunting Kuvira when he has his face on the window. Oh, I was dying during that part. Yeah. And then saving his dad. I thought he really pulled his own weight.
Yeah, it was an interesting choice to give him that sort of hero moment at the end. Brittany.
The fact that they tried to trip the giant robot.
Yeah.
With really tiny strings. It wasn't like they got some giant chains or anything. Okay, yep, Mitch, no. what was yours, Mitch?
Mine was Hiroshi's sacrifice, namely the animation of when Asami's ejected, and they kind of did that thing that Tanrak had happen to him when he's fighting Zaheer in season 3's near finale, and they have a slow motion, beautifully framed and shot sequence. And I think that those moments are perfectly poignant, and I really appreciate the fact that they're spending all that time to create the best emotional punch that they can by, you know, animating it in such a way.
No, fair enough. Lines, favorite quotes. Well, mine was literally every word of Prince Wu's singing, which some of I've already demonstrated for you, especially if you don't respect the brooch. But also, I really loved after you two have both got stuff about the engagement, but I've got right after when he proposes and he's like, you know, we've got to go and fight these things, and picks her up and she's like, it's exactly how I always pictured our engagement. And I just, she's so great. So yeah, Julie. So Karen and Brittany, you both had things surrounding this momentous occasion as well.
Yeah, well, it was so cute, and I really loved when Varric was like, Julie, will you do the thing for the rest of our lives? And I was like, there's literally no other way that Varric could have asked her to marry him than saying, will you do the thing for the rest of our lives? It was perfect.
Do any of you guys say do the thing a lot in your day-to-day life? Like,
do you, Natalie?
Like, make it do the thing. Yeah, I do. And I don't even know if I got it from this or not. Like, I don't know if this is the only, because the thing is like saying something is a thing, as Mitch has discovered through many years of podcasting with me, is definitely a thing, but I'd say it's a thing a lot.
How could I forget? How could I forget that it's a thing?
Brittany.
Mine was when Varric starts to get all serious and he's just like, I remember when I was a boy, I had an ostrich horse, named her Mrs. Beaks. And then he like keeps going, he's like, did I ever tell you I lived on a farm? Like, he just like kept going on and on and on.
The circus took me away.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, yeah. I was like, yes, this is great Wikia information.
Oh, good times. Yeah, we need a Varric spin-off. So, Mitch, what was your favorite quote?
Mine's Pema's. I raised Milo. I can handle anything. And she has this most nasally voice. I just, Pema the homewrecking whore, whatever. But I swear they changed voice actors for her or something. I want to check up on that.
I don't know. No, I think she just had more of a, like, yeah, she had something different tone. But, yeah. Favorite scenes in the final episode. Mine was the Bay Tano coming back as the extreme trombone player at the wedding. But also I like Prince Wu's plan to, you know, be a good leader and do whatever it is he wants to do because I love him forever now. So, yeah. Karen?
Kurosami holding hands, because if that's as far as they could go, then at least they did that.
Yeah. You stole that first out of the doc. I should have written that in.
Well, yeah. It's okay. I think the guys, Bryke, have done a few cute drawings on Tumblr, especially Brian. I think he tends to do a lot of, like, the style of it is, like, his own animation of them, like, cuddling. And, like, he's done some, like, quote-unquote fan art, like, canonical art of his own of them that is much more intimate. Not, like, sexy intimate, but much more intimate than...
Like, laying on each other and staring into each other's eyes and...
Yeah, like, more
holding
intimate.
Each other's faces,
so,
that kind of stuff. Yeah.
So canonical pictures by the guys, but not in the show. So you can check those out if you want. Brittany, what was your favorite moment?
Mine was Bolin going back up to take Mako's body out of the mecha suit before it exploded. I just thought that was great and really emotional.
Yeah.
Still thought he was dead at that point, by the way.
Yeah. Okay, Mitch, what was your favorite scene in episode 13?
Mine were simply the Bay outfits and hairstyles of Lin and Cora at the wedding. They looked so good.
Cora looked so cute. I loved her outfit.
Yeah, her hair backed too was really cute. Kind of like, this is like an improved, like not upper pony, but like back pony, hair back with bangs still in the front. She's really rocking it. She looks
so
just
glad
so fierce.
She doesn't have hair loopies.
Oh, I know. I wish she had hair loopies for the wedding, though. That would have really completed me. We did have that one random hair loopy waterbender, so that almost satiated me.
Yeah. Okay, so favorite quotes. Brittany stole mine. So I actually just had Tenzin at the end when Asami comes up and tells him, like, that, you know, Varric wants to use a flying suit off the top of the tower, and he's just like, that doesn't seem like a good idea, and blusters off, because I love Tenzin, I still love him, and I'm going to miss him, and his ridiculousness, and his, like, you know, easily flustered dadliness, and everything about him, so I will miss you forever, Tenzin. That was mine. Karen?
You may now do the thing, because I will be forever a sucker for Do the Thing and for Varric and Julie.
If you get married, will you have them say, you may now do the thing?
Maybe.
I like that.
You're like, life girl.
Well, that actually, you know what? That's legitimately like a good way of having a same-sex wedding, because you, like, you know, you may now kiss the bride. You may now do the thing, and then it's just whatever. You do your thing.
Yeah. That's true, because it's more equal, because you may now kiss the bride is very possessive for the groom. So
right.
Like, if it's a heterosexual
sometimes
wedding.
You may now kiss your bride, it's like, oh, okay.
It's still, that's still, yeah. Actually, it was Mitch who stole my quote, but Brittany has one that is really compassionate towards Cora, which is shocking.
I know, because I finally was like, all right, I'm glad they drove it home in the final hour. So... mine was from Cora, and she's talking to Tenzin, and she says, I know I was in a pretty dark place after I was poisoned, but I finally understand why I had to go through all that. I needed to understand what true suffering was so I could become more compassionate to others, even to people like Kuvira. And that moment, like, finally really struck me as, like, okay, right. Aang woke up, and everyone was dead. So, yeah, he went through a lot of suffering. We just didn't see it because he was, like, what, 11, 10? however old he was. But, like, with Cora, I'm just constantly frustrated with her. I still am. I wasn't really, like, this wasn't, like, the cure-all for three seasons of not liking Cora. But it helped a lot. It explained a little bit of her character. This was a moment where I felt like she actually grew as a person and would continue to, like, you know, take something from this final experience with her into the future.
Yeah.
After so many people have tried, it finally stuck.
Yeah. I am good for you, Brittany. I'm proud of you.
Thanks.
Okay, so Mitch actually had the quote that Mitch had the quote that I wanted. So Mitch, do you want to go ahead with that?
Yeah, mine's Bolin, and he goes, "No, you can't. This isn't the time to prove how awesome you are. I already know how awesome you are. You're awesome."
Yeah, and it's like, I was Rip like, Mako,
yeah. Hits you right in the feels.
So then, those are our final quotes and favorite moments.
Oh my gosh, it's over.
Legend of Korra. It's done. You're done, Brittany. You're free.
Wow.
And free. After, you know what? I have a special request. This can really wrap up for Brittany well, as she probably has to go. I think there's a special tweet after we go back our contact info that you should read, and I think you know who it's from.
Okay.
You know who I'm talking about, don't you?
I don't, but let's get going.
That's Avatar Central.
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
Let's go. Yeah. All right, so we're going to finish off now. If you want to get in touch about our entire run of Legend of Korra, there's no more spoilers to spoil. And you can reach us on rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Tweet us at re_watchable. You can comment on this post on hyperball.com, or you can join us on rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. You can also leave us an iTunes review, which helps keep the show alive and kicking and looking all legit. So if you rate us 5 stars, then Ariana and Mitch will continue to write your docs for Buffy, which I believe they will be doing, hopefully, anyway. And they're both going to be newbies for that show, so I am just waiting with bated breath to see what they come up with and how they interpret all of these actions and characters that I know so well, and like how it's just going to look to all of the newbies. So that's going to be really funny, probably.
That would be fun.
So we've got some feedback. So the first one, Nikki L. Hallow Switch, just saying, "So sad to be leaving the world of Atla and Korra, but beyond thrilled that you're covering Buffy next. Also, fantastic show." I assume they mean Buffy is a fantastic show. So that's going to be a big deal for a lot of people. There's going to be a lot of episodes. We haven't really, you know, nailed down how it's going to work. We're doing such a long rewatch, but we'll have to feel that out with you guys as we go. I'm sure you'll let us know how it feels for you and whether you are going to want us to just talk about Buffy for the next year and a half, or whether we would end up, having some other options that make it more varied. So we'll talk about that more when Buffy starts. Brittany, do you want to read this one for you?
Yeah, this kills me. So since the beginning of Avatar and into Korra, Avatar Central has stuck with us, always tweeting us on Twitter, had plenty of good conversations, and their final tweet to us, well, they'll probably tweet us again, but says, "Finale week already, time flew by. I remember finding your podcast right before the first Atla episode. So glad I did. Nice talking with you guys over the past year. I wish you guys the best of luck for future podcasts. # lettuce leaf, # flameo." And the fact that they included the lettuce leaf hashtag, which, as you know, solidified my love for Boomy. It just, it kills me. And I love Such Avatar Central pun. So much. It's the best pun. I've used it so many times.
Okay. All right. Mitch, do you want to do the next one, or Karen? Mitch, you do the next one.
Sure, this one comes from Marie at IlRam06. They wrote, "I was always sad that The Legend of Korra made me see Katara, Aang, and Toph as bad parents and kind of ruined childhood heroes with it." Yeah, I did.
Well, that's a downer, but it's kind of true. Do you guys feel differently about those leads? Like, do you kind of associate, like, those kids that we watched in Atla with, like, the parents that messed up all of these people? Like, do you actually really make the connection, and has it affected how you feel about those characters?
No.
You're like, no.
Yeah.
I can't push off a little bit less. Actually,
I see them as two different people. I also see them as, like, they're just, they're parents. They're real. They're not going to be perfect. And even if they were perfect, that would probably mess up their kids too, because they'd have such high goals to, yeah, exactly. So I just feel like this was realistic to all parents and all kids who had to live up to, you know, being the children of the Avatar and all of his friends.
That's true. Still want the spin-off.
It sounds like an album. The Avatar and all of his friends. But what Karen's really saying is you're going to be a messed up kid no matter what. So good luck growing up in America. Or the world, that is.
Wow! Yeah. Wow, that's harsh, Mitch. Okay, so Karen, do you want to read the last one?
Yes, this is from Gleek Freak at Performing Eek. Finally a reason to watch Buffy. Yay, I had a feeling that if you guys did a long show, it would be this. Yeah, this was kind of a big one for us, and it's been in the works for quite a while, and we finally decided to tackle it. Hopefully it won't be our last long show, because we have tons of plans. There are tons of really great shows out there, but we're all really gearing up for Buffy. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is definitely a huge challenge, like, to do something that long and to do something that, you know, that people have done it before. Like, we're not going to be the first people ever to do a rewatch of Buffy podcast. Like, you know, people have such strong opinions about it, like high expectations about it, you know, and because it's such a cultural, like, touchstone. So it's going to be a really interesting situation, and there's already some debate about how it's going to go. Like, it's just really going to be an intense experience, so you're gonna have to help us out basically, and lend us a bit of support and a bit of feedback about how, you know, how we're going with it. I guess I hope that that's a thing that we want. That's a thing that we want, right, Karen?
Yes,
good. You're like, no. But yeah, it's gonna be great, hopefully. And Atla and Cora have been great too, so thank you guys for hanging out with us. We've got a little bit more feedback. Brittany, do you need to head off?
I do. I'm sorry. Okay. I'll be back for the wrap-up episode next week, though.
Yeah, and we will see you then. And Brittany will continue to be on Twitter and stuff, so she will collect some feedback for the wrap-up about Legend of Korra.
Yeah, send me some of your favorite, like, I don't moments. Know. Yeah, like gift sets. Because I can look at all the gift sets now.
Anything
spoiled.
That you've been.
Oh, I can watch the book 4 trailer. I'm excited. I can watch that now.
Yes, you can. There's a really good Korra moment where she's like standing, huffing and puffing with her fists that I really want you to see and just be impressed by, because it's so well timed. You'll know what I'm talking about.
I'll watch that later tonight. But all right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Bye, Brittany.
Bye.
Bye, Britt.
Okay. So a couple of longer comments. We have. Okay, so first of all, one of them from Andrew Plural iTunes. Great podcast. I love these podcasts. I love the insightful talks about the show and the different dynamics. But I also love the little banter between all the hosts from time to time. I've only listened to the Avatar and Korra podcast because that was my favorite show growing up. I'm sad that Korra is coming to the end, but I really hope you guys do the comics. It would give me so much joy. I plan on going back to watch other shows just to have an excuse to listen to you guys. Love the podcast. Keep it up. Aww. Wow, that's like watching those shows just so you can hear us like banter at each other is like, that's dedication. So thank you.
That's like really the goal, though. Like, I feel when we did Rewatchable, we wanted to change the hosts and everything, but we also wanted them to be familiar voices, because a lot of us work together on a daily basis, and like Natalie and I have a long relationship doing another Teen Wolf podcast, and so we have a lot of history, and we do banter and talk and have inside jokes, and I feel like that's always what makes a podcast interesting.
Yeah.
Like Karen, you're always gonna understand why I call GPS as Karen, and it's not because of you.
Wait, what?
That's our inside joke. See, you don't even get it. That's so sad.
I don't know if I heard you.
We call our GPS as Karen. Remember?
Oh yes, that's yes. Our thing. And then you yell at Karen and I get scared, but it's not me.
Because it started kind of, I think, because of the SpongeBob computer wife Karen of Plankton, and it just kind of went off from there. So sorry, yeah. Karen, you just kind of inherited that.
Yeah, because we do have two new people coming in for this season of Buffy. Like, so two of the current group are not staying, and two new people are coming in.
Which one? We have heard their voices before, all the way back in Firefly.
Yeah, so they are not rewatchable newbies completely, but they haven't been on for a while. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. You know, the core group, you know, like, you know, team everyone hates us, which is like me, Ariana, and Brittany. we're all going to be here. Mitch is going to be here. And yeah, so hopefully if you do like our ridiculousness, like, that it might encourage you to like watch a show that you haven't necessarily watched before, because not everyone who's going to follow the show will be a super fan. Like, I'm actually surprised at how many people are like, oh, I'm finally going to watch Buffy because you guys are doing it. And I'm like, how have you not seen it yet? I don't understand how we even have newbies for Buffy. Like, I can't believe, but they're out there. So this is going to be wild. But yeah, the comics for Atla, I don't know exactly what the plan is for that, because some of them are still coming out. The Avatar ones, I think, are just about finished, and later on there's going to be Korra ones. It might be great if a group of us could commit to reading them. Some people have not read them yet, and maybe just do, like, one, you know, full-length episode, like a special episode of Rewatchable that talks about, like, the canon that we found out in the comics, because it is worth it, so... I'd hope that that would be something we could do, a special episode interspersed with Buffy at some point, or before we start. Probably not before we start Buffy, but it's something to think about, and I would personally like that. So, Karen...
That'd be a good way to break up Buffy. Like, break up Buffy between its year-and-a-half thing by doing, like an Atlas special. Like, what we've learned since in canon, since Korra has finished its rewatch or whatever.
Yeah, well, there's lots of options for if we're going to break up Buffy. There's a field of different options in how that would work, yeah. But we'll talk about that later, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've got some hyperbole comments here. Okay, so Mitch, do you want to read this one from Freddie?
Sure. Freddie's talking about the books correlating to a type of element, kind of. So they wrote... I think it's sad that we didn't get to see the Fire Nation, but I always saw Book 4 as a metal book. Book 1 was obviously focusing on air, yes. Book 2 on water, absolutely. Book 3 on earth. I'm iffy on that one, but I'll go with it. And the Beifongs are cool enough to devote them a whole season instead of creating a plot taking place in the Fire Nation, so I'm okay with that. And then they said, and yes, that twin was definitely hitting on Bolin. Winky emoticon.
Do they mean, like, one of Sue's twins, the Beifong twins?
Do you remember when one, like, pets his face after he catches them during, the prison escape?
No, not at all.
Yes, it was a thing last week. Okay. We were having fun with that.
All right, fair enough. Karen, how about you?
Carrie says, speaking of the identity of Sue's father, I have two theories. The first is obviously Sokka, because it would be amazing. Plus, Sue does have tanner skin than, like, Lin... Then Lin likes Sokka, so that's a definitely yes, right? Second is a character from the comics named Satoru, and I'll leave it at that in case the newbies want to read The Rift. But he has tan skin and hair that curiously resembles Sue's hair, so he could very well be Sue's dad. But I'm still holding out for Sokka.
How would you feel if Sokka was the father of this... Beifong dynasty, and he was just like, yeah, like, you know, not in the picture and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's kind of weird. I don't know how I would really feel about that.
Yeah, it would be quite strange. I mean, I bet, you know, I'm imagining that Toph was the one that ended it and was just like, leave me alone, please, with my children. Leave me alone, yeah. but I don't know. It's definitely something we don't have confirmed yet, but we'll see. Maybe they'll answer that question one day and we'll see. All right, I think that's everything. We're done with Legend of Korra. It's over.
Till next week, wow. When we still talk about it a little bit more.
Yeah, sort of. We're sort of done. We've finished all the episodes. So hopefully that was enjoyable for you. Thank you guys for listening to us, and we will see you next week with a wrap-up of Legend of Korra. And I really encourage everyone who's listening to watch Buffy with us. So if you haven't watched it, you should watch it, basically, with us from season one onwards, and hopefully you enjoy it or you find things to laugh at or criticize or whatever it is that you want to do. It is worth everyone watching, because it has a very strong place in the cultural zeitgeist. It made a lot of, it made a lot of other things possible, and it's sort of, you know, I think it's more of a touchstone in society than any other show that we've done so far. So, you know, even if you're like, I don't like supernatural things, I don't care. Watch Buffy. I don't care. Just stop arguing. Just do it. So we're going to do it. And it's going to be great. And
Buffy, please.
Yeah. There are so much more lesbionic Buffy ships than Cordelia, but I do see your point.
What's my ship's name? What's the official Tumblr name of it?
Don't! No. Can I just say?
No.
Do you know how long Buffy predates Tumblr, Mitch? We are not using Tumblr names. There are portmanteau names for some ships, but we're not talking about Buffy and Tumblr because Buffy is like Tumblr's grandmother. So shut up.
All right. What do we do with that, Natalie?
We're going to go.
Yes.
We're going to go, and we'll see you all later. So farewell. I'm Natalie.
I'm Karen.
I'm Brittany, and I'm Mitch.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Okay, cool.
All right. Okay, let's go. All right. 1, 3, 6. Okay. Shut up.
You just, like, kill something before.
Should I even ask?
Your podcast sacrificed before you could start.
Brad Rob.
Yeah, no. No, I'm just slamming my hand on the desk to get myself motivated. Sorry, I'm very ill. All
right.
Shut up, all of you. I'm doing the intro.
Oh, God.
How about me what?
The last comment here from Carrie.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if you wanted me to comment on the twin thing or not, and I was confused. Okay.
Almost as bad as my GPS.
Shut up, Mitch. Okay.